Since the words you speak define how you look at the world, coming up today on Travel with Rick Steves, we'll learn what the world loses every few weeks when, somewhere on Earth, another language dies off. And Ed Viesters tells us how he's made it to the top of Mount Everest and back again 7 times. 67 heritage sites have just been added to the latest watch list of endangered places by the World Monuments Fund. Erica Avrami joins us to explain what this includes. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
What is the World Monuments Fund and what is the World Monuments Fund Watch Program?
The World Monuments Fund is an organization that's nearly 50 years old and was established to help promote the preservation of important sites all around the world. The Venice floods back in 1965 were one of the early reasons why WMF became involved in this sort of work. Mm. And the World Monuments Watch actually is an advocacy program that we started in 1996. And every 2 years, we publish a list of sites that are endangered or that have some sort of issue that really needs attention. And it's about promoting awareness, raising international attention about the needs of these sites and their importance to society.
Why are these sites important to society? How do you, because it costs a lot of money, and a lot of people are saying, we just can't afford that. How do you defend spending money on heritage sites?
We need to understand how important they are to people. It's not just the places, but it's also the contributions they make to sustainable development, to economies through tourism, and also to our own social identity and our cohesion and cultural continuity. These really are reminders of our past, and as well, they're sort of beacons for the future. They help us understand the connections we have within our own cultures and to other cultures.
And when they're gone, they're gone.
And when they're gone, they definitely are gone.
Give me 3 or 4 examples of a place that's worth defending and why it would be at risk.
Well, there are all sorts of risks out there. 2 from this watch, the 2014 watch, are under a threat of conflict. In Syria, for example, heritage sites are being tremendously damaged and in some cases destroyed as a result of the conflict there. In Mali, we've seen a great deal of destruction as well. The mausoleums in Timbuktu, for example, and other sites that have been endangered because of some of the conflict that's occurred in the northern part of the country.
You've got violent groups, Muslim fundamentalist groups or whatever, attacking symbols of Mali's heritage. You've got a country at war in Syria. This is actually dangerous to go there and protect these places. How do you do that? I mean, how do you protect something in Syria?
The first thing is advocacy. The first thing is raising awareness. And whether it's through a petition like we've done for Syria or trying to do assessments of the damage that has been done, these are first steps toward long-term recovery. And things that are also endangered from natural disasters, well, also take a long time and take a great deal of sort of steps toward understanding conditions and rectifying the situation. The earthquake sites in eastern Japan, for example, were on the watch in 2012 and again in 2014 because it takes a while to recover from these disasters. Mm-hmm. The gingerbread houses of Haiti in Port-au-Prince were also on the watch in 2010 and 2012, again, because the effects of that earthquake were so devastating. It takes years to rebuild.
Okay, Erica, you've got these precious sites under risk in Japan and Venice and Syria and Haiti. Do you need a local group that's going to spearhead this protection work that you would then advocate for? Or do you actually get into the trench and do it yourself?
It's a combination of both. The Watch program is really a sort of bottom-up program. We accept nominations from people all around the world. So they come to us with the needs of all sorts of places, and then we use reviewers and a panel of experts to help determine those in which we can affect the best sort of positive change in a 2-year watch cycle.
Do you affect the change by supporting groups that are going to protect the site, or do you actually protect the site yourself?
Well, we don't own sites, but we do in some cases get very involved in projects. So we often partner with a local organization. But at the end of the day, long-term stewardship is really up to the local organizations that have the care and management of these sites in their hands.
I would think an endangered site would be have a much better chance of surviving whatever threatens it if it has a local organization that recognizes the importance of that, that you could then empower.
Absolutely.
How does tourism impact sites of importance to our different cultures' heritage, good and bad?
Tourism is definitely a double-edged sword. I think that we can see very positive effects of tourism. Route 66, our infamous mother road here in the United States, was on the watch in 2008. Hmm. And World Monuments Fund helped to support the development of an economic impact study that looked at the extremely positive effects of heritage tourism all along Route 66, creating jobs, helping local economies, all the way up to the national economy. So it really has a very good effect. And in fact, we're about to host an event to look into how we can better capitalize on those opportunities for tourism. But at the same time, you can see other places where tourism that's not properly managed is actually deteriorating the asset, the thing that's really important and why people want to go there. Venice, for example, which is on the 2014 watch, is there because we're trying to raise awareness about the impacts of cruise tourism in Venice.
Now, how does cruise tourism impact Venice in a negative or concerning way?
There's been a 400% increase over the last, I believe, 5 years in tourism through cruise ships coming to Venice. And during the peak season, there can be 20,000 tourists debarking from these mega cruise ships, which are now going into the Giudecca Canal. And so that kind of influx of people into these delicate heritage areas not only is damaging from the perspective of preserving these places, but it also highly impacts the quality of life for the people in the community. In many of these historic ports where cruise tourism is taking hold, there is very strong vocal activism on the part of residents against the cruise tourism.
Against it, because
in fact, a lot of the economic benefits don't go into the local community. A lot stay actually within the cruise industry. People like to eat on the boat because it's an all-inclusive package.
Yeah.
And so their spending on land is actually pretty limited. And it's really hard to manage some of these large groups that all arrive at once.
Erica Avrami is director of the World Monuments Fund's biennial watch list. And she's with us on Travel with Rick Steves to describe some of the latest additions to their endangered places listings. The full list is on the WMF.org website. Erica, I was just in Palestine, and I was at the Batir Biblical Terraces. These are terraces that were cut 2,000 years ago, and I heard from local people that the wall that's being built is threatening these precious 2,000-year-old terraces that are so integral to the people's identity there, the indigenous culture. Mm-hmm. And now I see that the World Monuments Fund is also aware of the challenges of the Batir Biblical Terraces outside of Bethlehem. Talk about how political destruction can actually be an issue with your work.
It's often an issue because heritage is all about identity. And some people see themselves and their communities and their societies in one way, and others see them in another way. The Bamiyan Buddhas in Afghanistan are a perfect example of that sort of struggle in terms of cultural identity. In the case of the Batir Irrigated Terraces, it's such a fascinating cultural landscape that's still being worked. I mean, it's still an active agricultural landscape. And the folks who nominated this to the World Monuments Watch in 2014 came from both Israel as well as the Palestinian territory. So it was really a joint nomination saying, listen, we don't want to get involved in the political side of this. This just can't happen. This is such an important landscape and aspect of our heritage. And the wall will essentially destroy much of what has been built over centuries.
That is so exciting that you're aware of the reality that you really can't pick sides in a political squabble, but you can find people on both sides of the issue that recognize that this is an issue that transcends the immediate political discussion, and we've just got to do something so it doesn't destroy something important to our heritage.
Yes, yes. In Singapore, for example, Bukit Brown, which is a famous cemetery and a fabulous green space in the middle of very highly developed and densely developed Singapore. It's the largest Chinese cemetery outside of China. The government has a great deal of foresight to be looking at ways to accommodate a growing population, ensuring that there are good transportation routes as well as housing. But part of what's happened is this unbelievably fantastic landscape and historic graveyard is now being partially destroyed in order to accommodate a major thoroughfare and in the future housing. So it's really about balancing that history and that identity and the quality of life for people who use Bukit Brown as a recreational space because it's an open green space against the other needs of society in terms of housing or transportation. It's often a very difficult set of decisions that have to be made. And What World Monuments Fund tries to do is really advocate on the side of heritage to say, sometimes you can blend these two agendas effectively. Mm. It's not always an oppositional situation.
Erica, when you look back, what are some of the losses that we've experienced, and or what are some of the gains that the World Monuments Fund has had, some triumphs that inspire you in your work and make your work both necessary and gratifying?
We've had some real losses. We've lost a number of particularly modern buildings. The Phyllis Wheatley School in New Orleans, for example, which was a fabulous mid-century modern school structure, was demolished. And we've had other modern sites in the UK, for example. We were able to help save the Preston bus station, which was on the watch in 2012. But another brutalist site, brutalist architecture is often very undervalued. Mm. The Birmingham Library is unfortunately still slated for demolition. So we have a mix of wins and losses, but I think in the end, the most gratifying aspect of the work is really the way in which the watch helps to reengage people and the places of their past. Mm-hmm. And when you see younger generations understanding their history and their culture through a different lens and being able to experience that in an actual place, be it a building or an archaeological site, I think that's really the most rewarding aspect of the work.
I love that. The whole idea of the value of raising awareness among young people for sites that are important for their heritage so their children will have something to know from where they came. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been speaking with Erica Avrami and her work at the World Monuments Fund. To learn more about her work and what the World Monuments Fund is up to, you can go to their website, wmf.org. Erica, thanks so much and best wishes with your work.
Thank you.
We'll look at what the world loses when endangered languages disappear in just a bit. Up next on Travel with Rick Steves, mountaineering legend Ed Viesters takes us up to the top of Mount Everest. Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. Tips about traveling in Europe and information about the EU are available at euintheus.org.